Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. On February 14th, a 19-year-old man armed with a semi-automatic rifle entered a high school in Parkland, Florida, killing 17 students and staff and wounding 14 others. In the wake of the mass killings, Americans debate what should be done to protect schools from such violent acts. My guests today are Sheila Rowley and Craig Hoppus, superintendents of the Seaside and Astoria school districts, respectively. They will speak about what safety measures are now in place in district schools, their positions on arming teachers and staff, and how school employees and students are coping. Rowley became superintendent of the Seaside School District in 2016 after serving as principal of Seaside High School and previously of Broadway Middle School and Cannon Beach Elementary. Hoppus has served as superintendent of the Astoria School District for 9 years and previously held administrative positions at Lewis and Clark Elementary and Astoria Middle School. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Sheila and Craig.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Let's just get to the main question I think everyone wants to know. Are our local schools safe? Sheila, you want to start off?
I think the answer is that safe needs to be defined in more than one way. There's physically safe and there's emotionally safe. And our schools in Seaside are old, but we do have physical safety measures in place relative to having all doors locked except for the main entrances to schools, which is a practice that's been in place for a long time. We have a protocol for strangers who come into the building or people that we don't know need to check in at the office, be identified, wear a tag. We have camera systems within the building. So we have some basic safety structures in place. We're in the process of building new schools, which will have some more sophisticated pieces in terms of how easily doors lock. But I believe that generally, you know, our schools are as safe as buildings can be without being fully new construction with new modern amenities in that area. But I think even more importantly, is it a place that students feel safe to come? And certainly the events of last month have gotten students' attention, and I know we'll talk about this more as we go on, but student safety relates so much to the culture of the building and how students feel a sense of belonging, feel a sense of being welcomed, of being heard. And I think those social-emotional safety factors really have a greater impact in many ways on how safe a school is rather than just a physical building, because really any building can have some vulnerabilities to it.
Craig, what would you say?
I would agree with what Sheila has said. In addition, in Astoria this fall, in three of our four schools are totally locked down, meaning you can't even get in during the day without buzzing in like a doorbell, and then there's a camera system to see who's at the door and letting them come in. It allows us to really monitor who's coming through our front doors. Can't do that in one of our schools just because of the massive amount of doors that they have at the school.
Which school is that?
Astoria High School. But we've taken measures there to make sure that all doors are locked during the day except for the very front door, right closest to the office. You know, Seaside's ahead of us in the facility part with the new buildings. We're in the process of evaluating our facilities and creating a long-range facility plan. And the safe and secure schools is probably a number one priority in that whole process and looking at our facilities. It's interesting, as it probably is in Seaside, the way buildings were built 20 years ago, 40 years ago, these type of things were not taken into consideration.
They didn't happen.
Didn't need to be taken into consideration, so now we do. So we do other things, like there's the physical part, but, you know, I meet with my administrators weekly, and we talk at length about everybody doing their drills, lockdown drills, those type of stuff, so that those type of things can be secondhand for kids. And I've heard, you know, we did a lockdown last year. At Astoria Middle School, and from what I heard from kids and parents, the kids knew the protocols and knew what to do. In fact, they were helping substitute teachers out pretty
right.
well. So it's sort of the normal type of thing we do. But I'll also agree with Sheila talked about the emotional part. We can concentrate on, kids are nervous based on last week, but we can concentrate on how our kids feel and what we can do to help and support them.
Do you have students asking a lot of questions, students of all ages? I mean, do you sense that they are pretty concerned or even fearful?
In Astoria, from what I've been told through building administrators, we have had conversations with kids both at the middle school and the high school level. Not concerned, like scared concerned, but just like just mm-hmm. concerned about what had happened and just concerned, general concern for safety. And we continue to discuss the things that we do.
The response that I've seen in students is, in addition to what Craig's saying, is I'm struck more by the fact that they are sad and they are angry more than they're fearful. And I think we've seen nationwide the voices of young people are being spoken loudly and clearly, and that is the emotion that we're hearing. Not fear, but indignation that no one is in their sense, at least it's how it comes across to me, has really done what needs to be done for them to feel safer at school. And you don't hear so much, I'm frightened for myself, but as much as you hear, I'm tired of this happening to students, and the adults that are in charge aren't solving the problem. And so I think I hear that more than I'm afraid to come to school. I don't.
Sure.
We haven't seen a drop off in kids coming. We haven't.
No. We haven't either. This time around, I'll agree with Sheila. This time around, we're starting to see that attitude from kids. Mm-hmm. Social media has helped that, but a lot of school shootings have helped that. And it's the same. I hear it from, you know, the adults. If you can't figure this out, then as kids, we're going to do what we need to do to figure this out.
Do you know if some of the local students are planning to be involved in the March 24th marches that are happening around the nation? There is one in Astoria that day, midday at noon.
Our students do have an activity planned, actually, for a slightly different date. I don't have it on the top of my head, where they will have an event at school that will last 20 minutes, and they will be giving 17 different statements, one per minute, on their feelings about violence in schools and the ways in which they think is important and effective for combating that, which have to do very much with areas of kindness, communication, support, and really looking in a very sophisticated and sensitive way at their concerns rather than just a reactive response. It's really quite impressive how kids are thinking through this problem in a whole new way.
An event, I think it's scheduled for March 14th, that mm-hmm. kids have come, and as adults, we're working through that with them and supporting them. Our concern is just to make sure that whatever they do is safe.
Right.
Know? And so we're working on that part.
And the kids have been very forthcoming mm-hmm. with their plans. This is not like a protest walk where the last people they want to know are the adults. They're being very straightforward with, we're planning to do this. Hope you'll come.
So it's something they're initiating.
Absolutely.
That's correct.
How about parents? Have you heard a lot of calls from them, especially since February 14th and the killings in Parkland, Florida?
I have been in communication with parents since then, not a lot, but some, just asking about our safety measures that we have and if we're continually looking into them, and we are. I think Sheila and I will both share that safety is a large concern for us at all times.
Right.
So it's constantly.
Beyond this type of incident, it's, our number one job is to keep kids safe. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm the same way. I've had a few calls and emails, but not a large number. large number. We also use, I believe, the same protocols. It's a nationwide program called a Standard Response Protocol, and our staffs have been through training on not just responding to an emergency like this, but a variety of emergencies. And this is something that we've worked with law enforcement locally. Mm-hmm. They're very familiar with our buildings, you know, very much partners in the process of keeping students safe. And we have the same protocols K-12. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like our tsunami protocols. It will be the students who lead the way, because they've been living it, these things for their whole life. Same thing with a fire drill. Kids know exactly what to do.
So are you referring to the lockdown procedures in the event of a shooter, for example, mm-hmm. entering a school? And is that something the students are used to going through those?
We do practice all those type of drills.
Right.
And that's students
whether
of all
fire,
ages.
Whether it's fire, lockdown, mm-hmm. lockout, yes.
Right. And there's a difference between a lockdown and a lockout. A mm-hmm. lockout is when there's a danger outside the building and we continue business as usual, but no one can get in.
Mm-hmm. In light of this most recent event, have you considered locking even the front doors? Since you said in both of your districts, all but the front doors are locked.
So in Astoria, three of our four schools are locked, the front doors.
Completely.
Completely locked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in the one school I can't lock it because I had no way for people to get in.
That's the high school.
High school, yeah. It's only one door that's open. But it's just, have no way of people getting in during the day.
And that's pretty much how the buildings are in Seaside. Mm-hmm. They're just not constructed in a way that for people to get into the building if the front door was locked. But our front doors are in locations where the people walk directly into where they would be supervised by office staff.
Yeah.
Do you have armed guards in the schools?
No, we do not have armed guards.
Is that something you think the schools should have?
I don't think that's the most effective strategy for school safety.
So the way I look at this is that an armed guard is reacting to a horrific situation. And I've thought a lot about this. I don't know of a school shooting in this nation ever that did not have a mental health issue related to it. So I think we need to spend our time dealing with mental health issues of all people, whether it's kids or adults, whoever it is. Because guns only react to what the problem is. It doesn't solve the issue. I doubt Sheila did get into education years ago to have a gun on me, and I would bet you could ask the majority of my staff, they did not get into education to wear a gun, and nor were we ever asked to wear a gun or to have a gun with us. I also question the environment the kids would be in if people have guns on them.
How do you think that would affect the classroom, for example?
I think it would be unsettling for kids.
I would agree with Craig. And I think it's important to keep perspective. You know, this is an enormous tragedy, and there have been other ones. But in the United States, there are over 37,000 high schools, public and private high schools. And I've had folks make the comment to me, well, it's no longer an if, it's a when. And that's not the case. It's there is so much more to school and to school safety, again, than an active shooter. And having spoken with the law enforcement in Seaside and working with Chief Dave Hamm, you know, we talked about individuals who are armed just in general terms, and it requires months of training for a police officer to be ready to a new officer to react in an emergency situation, and to ask people who that's not their primary job, that's not why they're hired, to have that kind of training and to sustain it over time and to be able to respond in a life and death situation. Again, people who are trained to teach English or math or kindergarten, it's not the mission of a school to be doing that. We do keep kids safe. That is our mission. But that's not probably the method that would serve us the best.
I agree.
If you're just joining me, you're listening to a pre-recorded interview with Sheila Rowley and Craig Hoppus, superintendents of the Seaside and Astoria School Districts, respectively. They are speaking about measures in place to keep schools safe, their position on arming teachers, and related issues in the wake of the latest school shooting, the February 14th killings of 17 students and staff at a Parkland, Florida high school. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. Have you talked with teachers about their opinions on whether they should be armed? I mean, do you have teachers going both ways?
I don't. I have them all going one way, and they've been quite vocal that they... I haven't heard from every teacher, but of the several I've heard from is that they very much do not think it's in the best interest of the students for them to be carrying guns.
Craig?
Exactly. I've talked to a few. They have no interest in it.
I'd like to sort of add on to Craig's comment about mental health concerns, and we know that mental health issues are a significant challenge across communities in America. And I think there's more to consider than just that, that there are some individuals who are just angry, and that, you know, doesn't necessarily imply that they've had a medical diagnosis of mental health. And I think we have to balance that conversation with the already large concern that we still have a lot of stigmatizing of mental health in our community, and to make sure that in those conversations, and this is, I know that Craig didn't do this, but just in our communities in general, that there's an assumption that the problem is rampant in our community of individuals who are dealing with mental health issues, because
exactly.
That's a lot of our population. It's just like there's a lot of schools, and I think keeping perspective on those pieces is important. One of the things that we feel is really going to serve us well is we have in both of our districts begun practicing trauma-informed practices within our classrooms and dealing with the challenges that young people have when they have been traumatized sometimes in their youth, and teaching students self-regulation skills, because they may have very reactive skills rather than the ability to step back from a difficult situation, take a deep breath, find a way to regain some perspective and move forward. And we are actively teaching in our schools from kindergarten on now self-regulation skills. And I think that is in that realm of what's the long-term solution here? So that not only are the buildings safe, but that culturally we've made a shift where there's been a reduction in just the mindset of perpetrating this kind of violence.
Do you see some students who raise red flags in this way?
Students will come in with to us with different qualities and concerns. I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, that's a really tough question, because we see a lot of kids who have a lot of challenges. Mm-hmm. But again, where does that cross over into a fear of this type of violence? The concerns that we're reading about this young man in Florida, I would like to think that we would have picked up on clues.
He had some clear red flags.
And when we do get a concern, it's often because students have brought it to our attention.
Mm-hmm. And apparently is something that happened in Florida, but as well as to the FBI. But as we know, those concerns weren't acted upon, unfortunately.
We have never had a kid rise to that level. We have, like Sheila mentioned, some kids who we have concerns with. I'm very pleased the amount of resources and staff that we have trained-wise to help and support those kids. Because mm-hmm. Usually it comes, like when Sheila said, through kids. But if kids are struggling that way, we provide pretty good support for them quickly.
Right.
Explain what some of that is, because I know you don't have exactly have an excess number of counselors on staff.
No, but we do have counselors. You know, Sheila talked a little bit about this trauma-informed care. We've teamed together with Tillamook School District. It's Clatsop County and Tillamook School District, and we go through pretty extensive 4 days of training this year with some resources to help with trauma-informed care next year.
For your teachers and other staff members?
It's training right now for staff members, teachers, administrators, classified. This was a pot of money that the legislature provided 2 years ago, a year ago, to get this type of training. That's how much trauma-informed care has impacted kids and adults. And I would say for us, counselors are a big piece. They've been trained so well on these type of areas. We still have that connection in Astoria, at least I can't answer. She said we still have that connection with the mental health services here in Astoria with CBH. Astoria School District has hired this year what they call our family liaison counselor, who works directly with to support families and kids. So when these type of things come up, we do have those type of resources in place.
And we have similar resources. We don't have the family liaison, but we have two full-time therapists from CBH who are housed in our district.
That's a behavioral health care.
Right. Yeah. And we have instituted in both of our elementary schools now a classroom. We call it Mission Control. That's not a full-time classroom. It is a place where kids come, some of them scheduled, some just because something comes up throughout the day for short segments, again, to go through the process of learning how to deal with difficult emotions, self-regulating, de-escalating, and it has had a profound difference on the office referrals at the elementary level. They are less than half that they were last year, and we're seeing an improvement in academics as well as behavior as we teach kids those pieces about how to be in a tough situation and get through it in a positive way.
And examples of trauma would be abuse, loss of a parent. What other kinds of trauma would they experience?
Loss of parent, abuse, physical abuse.
And there can be, you know, things that any family might have. Death of a family member. We have a fairly mobile population of students. We have students who are very young who've been in four schools in 1 year. That's very traumatizing for some children to not know what to expect, to have that kind of instability. Natural disasters. It's just really the type of things that would traumatize a student are not that different from what would traumatize an adult. Mm-hmm. Witnessing something that they shouldn't have seen.
You mentioned a few moments ago, Sheila, that students are responding with kindness. Do you mean responding with kindness towards, say, the student who may be isolated, the loner, who doesn't have as many friends? I'm not sure what you meant.
Well, you know, the students would probably, they would be a great interview for sure on this topic. Mm-hmm. I think it's more just that's how we conduct ourselves, that your default way to respond to any individual is to be kind and to be inclusive. And, you know, that's hard sometimes, especially for, adolescents and kids who are finding their own place in society and how they fit within the culture and the community of a school, to be kind and welcoming to all. But I think to explicitly state that that's a goal in the way that they want to be is a game changer in itself.
And just like reading and math, we spend a lot of time on those type of
discussions
on character ed and perseverance and kindness and quite a few.
Mm-hmm. At all ages?
At all ages.
At all ages.
Okay, it looks a little bit different, but the words are the same.
Mm-hmm. And we follow a student behavior system, and I don't want this behavior kind of implies that they're misbehaving, that the mantra is be safe, be responsible, be respectful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty universal in our county that mm-hmm. we have adopted, called positive behavior intervention supports. And there's not a child from 5 years old through 18 who cannot tell you those three mm-hmm. tenets of how we conduct
really?
Ourselves.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wonderful. Are there resources you don't have that you really would like to have to just really address this challenge?
I would answer that in two ways. One is just to continue to provide training to staff around trauma-informed care, which we're working on. But that'll be always be ongoing training. And I think Seaside's addressing it, and we'll probably address it just around facility enhancements, around safety. Mm-hmm. Just that part. There's just so much you can do more, but we can't just because of the ways our facilities are right now. But
That's a good point. What with the new schools that mm-hmm. you're building, Sheila, what types of safety features will they have that older schools don't?
The safety features that they will have are ones that we will have in our school that are pretty much standard in new school construction now, and that is that locking systems are electronic. They're not key-based, and so they are much more difficult for someone who doesn't have the tools to have access to gain access. We have the ability to lock the whole building simultaneously from a master switch. There are better systems of visibility within the building. A building can be subdivided into regions if necessary through security doors. Just better quality glass, just better quality building materials. Also, in our new school, just the way that it will sit, there will be a long line of sight to see anyone approaching the building, with some of our major office operations looking out at the incoming road. And so there's just some physical location facility changes that will make a difference. And some of the doors, exterior doors, don't even have knobs on the outside.
Yeah,
they're just flat.
Mm-hmm. So somebody couldn't open them if they wanted to.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. We're looking at, if we get to potentially do this, one of the things we're looking at is a possibility that anybody who comes into our building with cameras and viewing and the things that Sheila talked about, the first place they go, they're shuttled, right? The way the traffic pattern is, they have to go into the office.
Right.
They don't have a choice.
And the design of mm-hmm. the middle school, high school is that there's two sets of doors, and to get, you can walk in set one, but to get in set two, you have to walk through the office.
Yeah. When do you hope to have the schools open?
September of 2020.
That sounds not that far away.
Nope, it's going quickly.
And Craig, you were hinting that there may be some improvements made in Astoria.
The school board will make a decision in May whether to run a bond. That we have a school facility bond that's expiring in 2 years, so just to see if we need to do some upgrades based on this previous bond.
Okay. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I've been speaking with Craig Hoppus and Sheila Rowley, superintendents of the Astoria and Seaside School Districts, respectively, about the issue of school safety in the wake of the latest mass shootings at an American school, this one at a high school in Parkland, Florida, on February 14th. There, 17 students and staff were killed, and 14 others were injured. Thank you for coming into the studio today, Craig and Sheila.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you for having us.
This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Perspectives was engineered today by Brian Bovenizer. The show can be heard every other Friday on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to contact me, send me an email to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.